Miami Memoirs presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of Florida attorney Lewis M. Ress. Miami Memoirs uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful, and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. From multi-million-dollar land deals to the ghostly aftermath of an Everglades plane disaster via a prematurely deep-frozen cat, these tales feature a parade of unforgettable characters, all sharply observed by a storyteller with a very human empathy for ordinary and extraordinary individuals caught up in the law.
Lewis has just released a new book, Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Fans of strange cases and wild tales will need no introduction to the author's brilliant and fast-paced storytelling, laced with salty evocations of the human carnival of the era and shot through with compassionate insight. From advising the heir to Colonel Sanders and falling out with Buddy Hackett to nighttime jogging with Vitas Gerulaitis, the stories keep on coming. Larry the charismatic Wheeler dealer needs to be rescued from yet another risky deal, and a bridge-playing mobster needs help to find his missing daughter. All this and more, along with sage advice against buying a lottery ticket, you might win. Welcome to round two. And now, let's begin.
Hi everyone. Welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Lewis Ress. This is episode 43, My Doctor's Dead. That sounds a little, I don't know. I want to know what happened there. How did the doctor die? There's a lot of questions I have, Lewis. And I'm the host, Jeanette Garcia, and I'm here with Lewis Ress, who's going to walk us through this fun story here he has for us.
Jeanette Garcia, you're terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being my host and helping me get through these wonderful stories that I experienced myself. And are all true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened. People say, how did you have all these experiences? I don't know why, but I did. But if you look around you, you're having experiences every day,
mm-hmm.
and there's always something a little different out of the ordinary. And if you just take the time to look at it carefully, you'll have
on
a
it.
Much more mm-hmm. exciting and entertaining life.
Yeah.
And you'll learn more. And if you see something that amuses you, you ought to dig in a little, pull a book. The internet is so easy to use as an encyclopedia, and there's so much in there. The articles are very worthwhile,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of my work, instead of going to the Library of Congress and sitting in the big study room, you can do this on your internet,
on
your
phone. Yeah, on your phone, yeah.
So it's wonderful. My Doctor's Dead.
I can't believe the title of your next story, huh?
Yeah, that's it. My Doctor's Dead. Why my doctor's dead? Because that's good news. You always want to outlive your doctor. Better he should be dead and you be alive.
That's a good point. Yeah, I agree with that one. So what's the story here?
Well, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lousy, rotten, rainy, cold, miserable February morning in Miami. And it was just terrible. I was aching all over. The entire sky was black gray. And the rain came down, cold, wet, damp, chilly. A whole chill went through my body. It went through and through. I was just tired after a mean session taking a sworn statement to deposition in Miami Springs, right near the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And my muscles were tight, and my chest was slightly painful. My toes were cold and damp, and my doctor, Bert Travis's office, was only a few blocks away, so I decided to drop in and possibly have him take a look at me. And thus started the saga.
And was his office open when you got there?
Oh, yes. His nurse was there, and she said, Mr. Ress, it's so good to see you. Dr. Travis is out, but he will be back soon. How can I help you? And I told her what was bothering me, and she said, okay, I'm going to save some time. Come on in and lie down, and I'll take an electrocardiogram.
Oh, the nurse seems really nice. She came and attended to you.
Yeah, I always liked her. Kathy Gallagher was her name. She was a natural. She was gentle and soft-spoken and well-mannered and very thoughtful, although a bit tough. And very professional. She was divorced. She had a daughter. And in fact, I would bet that she was either Persian or from somewhere in the Middle East. And had gotten the Irish name of Kathy Gallagher through a failed marriage. Anyhow, she was always nice to me. And she was just a little formal or cool.
Oh, so what did she do?
She said, lie down and relax. That's it. Relax. Easy. Relax. She was looking at the printout of the electrocardiogram, and she said, I'll leave this record on Dr. Travis's desk. I think I hear him coming now. And Kathy was always a bit formal with me, Now she was sweet and compassionate and even friendly. She put her hand on my chest and she stroked my head. And Bert Travis was in a rush as usual. He said, "Sit down, Lewis, and I'll take a look at the EKG." Ah, shit.
Uh-oh.
Bert
Whoa,
Travis,
that doesn't sound good.
Not good.
No.
Bert Travis, my doctor and my friend, slammed the EKG into the wastebasket like a basketball dunk shot. He said, "Shit, this EKG stinks. Get up on the table and relax." What? Relax what? My heart was going a mile a minute. He pulls out the stethoscope. He holds it on me. He says, "Breathe in, hold it, breathe out. Put on your shirt and come back into my office." They always say that.
So it didn't seem like he saw something good there. Lewis,
no.
I would have been freaking out.
I'm sitting across the desk from him, and he looks at me. He says, "Lewis, you have a choice. Your EKG is grossly abnormal. You can either allow me to admit you to the hospital right now so that we can keep an eye on you, or you can go home, get into bed, and hope that we don't have to get you to the hospital by ambulance. I'll show the admission as an upper respiratory infection, so you won't have a record of a heart problem, and we'll go from there."
So what did you do?
Well, there was really no choice. I had to cancel out the next 2 days and go straight to Palmetto General Hospital. And there they took more EKGs and blood samples and all kinds of stuff.
Mm.
And after 2 hours in a private room, I'm put in the cardiac care unit. This room isn't half bad. And I'm feeling warm and comfortable, and I don't have any symptoms. Every hour or so, there's another EKG, and by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the nurse comes in and starts moving me.
And what was going on?
Well, I took a look at her, and she was all business. I said, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" She said, "We're moving you to a cardiac intensive care unit. Your EKGs are getting worse."
Oh, boy. Oh, my gosh. So what next after that?
Well, it's like the movies. The bed is being wheeled down the corridor.
Wow.
And everyone is watching. And you look up and you see the ceiling. It's as though I was heading down the last mile for an execution. They wired me up with a heart monitor. And the window in the new room faces a brick wall. Fortunately, I know the hospital administrator. And with one phone call, I get a rare steak and a bottle of good wine. If I'm going to go, I might as well go.
So what did you do once you were there?
Well, no one was around. And I picked up the chart at the end of the bed and took a look at it. And it read, I read the EKG report. It said, "Incomplete left bundle branch block, inverted T waves and ST waves, definitely abnormal record."
Yeah, that definitely doesn't sound good. Incomplete. We got all these words, abnormal. What happened?
Well, I wasn't happy. By now, it's around 9 o'clock, and in comes Dr. Bert Travis. All this time, I'm feeling fine, and I can't really believe that I need to be in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Lewis, your EKGs kept getting worse." He said, "It's getting worse and worse. The computer projects that you will have a heart attack tonight."
Oh my God.
At around midnight.
Jeez.
"I'm going to stay in the hospital, and we're going to have the Condition Blue team ready for you throughout the night." What the hell am I dreaming? It's terrible. My doctor's sitting at the end of the bed, and he is crying.
Oh, this is just getting worse and worse.
"Bert, what about moving me over to the Miami Heart Institute?" "Lewis, that's too late, and it's too dangerous to do that. Don't worry. We're all set for you."
Well, now it sounds awful. Like, you must have been freaking out. The doctor's freaking out. What happened next?
Now Dr. Travis is gone, and I'm alone.
Ugh.
And it doesn't look good, but I'm in no pain. And I call my wife, and I tell her to get down to the hospital with our son, Brad, and our younger son. He's in the middle of his homework. She finally realizes the situation, and she's on her way. I call our older son, who's away at prep school. He was away at Choate.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a short conversation with him. It might be our last.
Oh, my God.
Then I call my parents, and I don't tell them anything. I just listen to their voices.
Oh.
Make small talk.
And did your wife and son get down there?
Yeah, when Esther and Brad leave, I'm alone again, and it's quiet. And I start to slowly think of what a good life I've had and how lucky I've been. A good life, a good marriage, nice kids, nice parents. There's no anger. There's no bitterness. I'm not even upset. I'm relaxed. I'm floating. I'm content. I'm at peace. I now know what the state of grace is all about. I'm ready. I'm calm. Well, maybe I'll put on the television. And there's Johnny Carson. Remember him?
Yeah.
He was the late night television host.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't remember him, he was funny, but he was quite an angry man.
Oh. And in all this, did the heart attack ever happen? What happened?
Yeah, well, suddenly I say, what's this? What's this? Chest pain. It's getting stronger. Am I imagining it? No, I'm not imagining it. It's in the center of my chest. It's 1 o'clock in the morning and it's happening. Push the button, push the button.
Ugh.
In rushed the team, consisting of Dr. Travis and a male and female nurse. They look at the monitor, they roll me around, and they listen to my heart. Bert says, Lewis, you're fine. It was just indigestion.
Oh,
you shouldn't
gosh.
Have had that goddamn steak.
Oh,
Turn off the TV and go to sleep. Push the button if you need us. And he leaves.
Okay. Did you finally have that heart attack that you had forecasted?
Dr. Travis was now gone. And I had no trouble falling asleep. No, I didn't have the heart attack. The next thing I knew, it was morning. And I looked out of the window, and I saw that wonderful, beautiful brick wall. Each brick had been carefully and personally laid by some caring craftsman. The mortar was a light whitish gray. The bricks were reddish brown. The sun was shining. It was beautiful. I was alive, and the brick wall was gorgeous. I was alive, and I would be alive for a long, long time. Right until now.
That's great. I mean, I'm really glad you didn't have that heart attack, but I want to know how this all happened. Like, what ended up happening? Was it, you know, a bad reading on the EKG? Like, what was going on?
Well, it was just a false alarm.
Huh.
I was 50 years old at the time. I'm now 91.
Mm-hmm.
I've run 15 full marathons and over 60 half marathons. I ran a half marathon only a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I continue to play singles tennis. And with over 15,000 runners in the last race, I was the oldest. And my EKG goes back to normal while I'm running.
So you're okay. You're doing great. And
yeah.
What about Dr. Travis?
Dr. Burton Travis, my friend, he drank, he smoked, he took baby aspirin each day, and he died of a heart attack about 10 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. So what's the bottom line here?
The bottom line, it's a good idea to survive your doctor.
Wow, yeah. No, especially it's kind of quite ironic that he passed away with that the same thing that he tried to keep you from, you know, from happening.
He was a neat guy, Bert.
Yeah.
And I learned tips.
Mm-hmm.
I give lectures to the post cardiac surgery patients.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Mended Hearts.
Huh.
And I gave them a lecture on living a longer and a better life.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them to get out with a watch and walk for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
By 5 minutes out and 5 minutes back. And then walk the next day 7 minutes out and then 10 minutes out. And then put a little skip step in there every so often and skip a little.
Mm-hmm.
Extended to a half hour out. And before you know it, they'd be getting a lot of cardiovascular exercise. And while you're doing that, it's a wonderful time to do some introspection.
Hmm.
You can do very good relaxation, very good yoga type of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Relax your mind. You can sing. You can think of things that are comforting.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to think of you can think of problems and resolve a lot of problems.
That's
when
true
you're doing
too.
That.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful psychiatric thing for your attitude, a mental attitude, and so it's a physical exercise and diet, and having a good mental attitude, and have a good quality of life, help others. Helping others is a wonderful thing. Being positive. I came here today and I was a little down.
Oh.
And I caught myself. I said, what are you down for? Be positive.
Yeah.
And the minute you turn around, everything starts going better for you.
Yes.
We don't lose the transcripts from one of our lectures comes back. Good things happen when you
uh-huh.
have a good attitude.
Yes.
So I started to think about the mortality, dying, death and dying. There's a lot of stuff written about that.
Oh, yeah.
And in my lifetime, when I was young, 25% of the children died in the first half year of births, 25% of the kids. Now it's 2.9% worldwide.
Hmm.
50% of the children never reached puberty the age of 15.
Oh, or so. Wow.
Now it's only 4.6% are lost. So you take, and it depends on your socioeconomic, political situation.
Yeah,
of course. Take Iceland as the best. Hmm. Iceland, 0.16% are lost in the first half year. And in the Central African Republic, 9%, that's the worst, are lost in the first half year.
Wow.
Then you go to how many die before the age of 15. In Iceland, 0.3% die before the age of 15.
Hmm.
In Somalia, 15% die before the age of 15. Enormous range. Why? Because it's medication,
mm-hmm.
it's drugs, it's medical facilities.
Mm-hmm.
If you, they were losing a lot of people in childbirth, and in this country, in disease, they didn't have antibiotics. Mm-hmm. So I started to think of what would be the reasons for a prolonged life expectancy, medical advances.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a list. I did some research,
mm-hmm.
and I found that there was a meeting in London, and they talked about the greatest medical advances. And a lot of it goes back to the progress that the Mayo brothers made during World War II, I think, World War One or World War II. They were they ran the medical program for the Army, and they devised a system of tubes. In the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, they had pneumatic tubes the way they used to have in the department stores, where you'd have something the way you go to the bank and you put the stuff in and it shoots through a tube.
Yeah.
Well, they had tubes shooting all over the Mayo Clinic with your medical records.
Huh.
So when you went from one doctor to the other, they had your records by the time you got there, and they knew what they were talking about. They knew who you were and what your problems were. Now, one of the greatest advances is electronic medical records.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's so much material that it is, you have artificial intelligence diagnosing it or evaluating it and helping you with your diagnosis, which is important.
Yeah,
you can't just treat symptoms. You got to know what you're treating, know what the cause is.
Right.
So electronic medical records are one of the big things. Then they have HIV combined drug therapy. That was a big thing. It was going through the society, and they were able to control HIV. Then there's minimally invasive surgery. That came about.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know anything about that?
Well, only that it's, you know, it doesn't require you to actually open up the patient. You could do it, you know.
Yeah, I had my... I had my hernias repaired through a tube.
Uh-huh.
It's called the bottle in the building a ship in a bottle.
Huh.
And you're going to build the ship through the opening of the bottle. And they just slide a tube in, and then they have the scissors at the end, and they suck it out, tripping, and you don't have an incision.
Wow. Yeah, I know.
My son did that at the Mayo Clinic. He was chief surgical resident there. And the guys came in from all over the world for surgery. It's the fanciest place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And my son was a kid. And this guy came in from Italy in his private jet. And he said, "You're going to do the operation? You look like a sunny boy to me." And my son said, "Don't worry." And the next day, the guy says, "When are you going to do it?" And he said, "We did it last night. You were sleeping." And he said, "Where's the mark? Where's the scar?" He says, "There is none.
Wow.
There's a piece of a Band-Aid over the hole." He said, "We did it through a tube." And the guy says, "No wonder people come here."
Yeah.
This is great.
That's incredible.
So it's robotic. It's endoscopy. It's faster. It's shorter.
The
recovery
healing process.
Time is reduced.
Yeah.
There's no scarring.
Process.
There's no pain. And being under anesthesia for a long time subjects you to a lot of risks.
Yes.
A lot of anesthesia accidents.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the big things. Now they have needle-free injections. Did you know that? They're air-powered.
What?
And you don't
that
even
I didn't know
you
about.
Don't see the needle.
Wow.
They have new surgical procedures, which organ transplants, they never had that.
Mm-hmm.
Bones, they have plates and screws
plates,
in the back.
Mm-hmm.
In the brain, God knows what they're doing with brain surgery.
Yeah.
and the skin, you have Mohs surgery where they cut out the cancer and they cut out all around it and they have the pathologist look at it to make sure that they've got all the cancer mm-hmm. before they patch you up.
Wow.
What about vaccines?
Mm-hmm.
Those we used to have, we were dying like crazy from these things, going all the way back to the plague.
Yes.
And the Black Death and what was causing that. They found out what was causing it, and then they did a immunology, which is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
And influenza, smallpox, the mumps, measles, God knows, COVID.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things are coming under control. If we didn't have the immunization with the COVID, can you think of what would be going on in the world right now?
Yeah.
Go back 2 years and think when we first started with the COVID, what would have happened to the population? We would have been decimated.
Yes.
Antibiotics. Penicillin was great. During
Huge.
World War II,
yeah.
The guys would get shrapnel wounds. They'd die from infections in the leg.
Yeah.
Now they spread some penicillin powder on it and wrap it up, and it would save their lives.
Yeah, that's
so
huge.
As we have all these medical advances, there's a socioeconomic effect. The mortality tables change, and life expectancy changes. So life expectancy at 1935, let's say, was 55 years for a male.
Mm-hmm.
Well, President Roosevelt introduced Social Security. That was a big socialist communist thing.
Mm.
Oh, wow, we can't have that to help people retire.
Mm.
And Medicare came along,
mm-hmm.
and you had to be 65 to qualify. Well, nobody lived to be 65. It was a heck of a good investment for the government.
Yeah.
They would take all the money and keep it.
Right.
And you didn't get your money back until you were 65, and people were dying at 55.
Yeah.
So 54. And then now life expectancy just dropped 1 year because of COVID. But it's now, I think, 78 and a half for males and 80 for women.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Life insurance business makes a fortune on, they make their money on these false tables.
Hmm.
The actuary tables that they use, the life expectancy mortality tables, are usually 17 years old.
Mm.
They use so in the past 17 years, your life expectancy has dramatically increased.
Right.
It was going on 6 months in every year. For a while,
mm-hmm.
it increased as they solved the problems with birth, deaths at birth,
mm-hmm.
and a high death rate for children. As they solved those problems, your life expectancy tables kept getting larger, higher and higher and higher.
Mm-hmm.
So now they write you a policy. You write a term insurance policy, and they use a 2005 table.
Is there any way to contest that?
There's no way to contest it. The government is, politicians, and they have lobbyists, and
great.
what do you learn from this story? Well, all the stories are the same.
We live in a better world than we did, maybe, as far as medical advances go.
Technologically, it's terrific.
Yes.
My mother-in-law survived three doctors. Survive your doctor.
Yes.
The doctors don't practice what they preach.
No.
They don't exercise.
No.
They
this
don't
guy
get
smoked.
Involved in wellness programs.
This guy smokes. He drinks.
That's right. They drink a lot. They eat fatty foods. They eat steaks. They want to enjoy their lives.
Yeah, he was telling you not to eat your steak because you got indigestion.
Yeah.
There he is smoking away.
Well, you never know what's going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no substitute for luck and good genes. And the genetics are a great part of what happens to you.
It's
your
true.
Body build and your body chemistry and your proneness to cancer
mm-hmm.
and to diseases and to failure of organs. It always concerns me that as you get older, your organs can't hold out. It's like the carburetor in your car. It finally is going to wear out someday.
They start giving out, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you never know what's going to happen to you. So enjoy the smallest pleasures of life
mm-hmm.
and celebrate your life every day.
Every
because
day.
Because it's a miracle.
Yes, every day. That is powerful. And I love how the first thing you told me today when I saw you, it's like, so how are you doing? And you're like, I'm alive. I loved it.
Biggest thing is to stay alive.
Stay alive.
And be happy.
Enjoy every moment. Yeah. Enjoy every moment you have, because it's not for granted. So beautiful message. Thank you so much, Lewis.
Until
next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, Miami Memoirs, and be sure to pick up a copy of Lewis Ress's new book on Amazon.